Hey folks, greetings from the Offensive Security Group here at Secure IT 360, coming at you with a new episode of the Cyber Threat Perspective. You've got Brad and Spencer here, and today we're going to talk about defense in depth, which is a little bit ambiguous, I think, and maybe gets thrown around a lot. And so we're gonna try to pin this thing to the wall so that we can understand it a little bit more. So So what was your inspiration for this? This was kind of your idea. Spencer. Yeah. So
we are offensive guys, right? So we do pen testing and offensive security stuff, but both Brad and I, you and I both come from a defensive security world,
Yeah.
I worked in the banking industry. I worked in insurance. We both come from IT and systems security and, systems administration and things like that. So while we do pen testing, offensive security for a living right now, we have a very good perspective into that world. We work with a lot of clients on these engagements on things that are not, necessarily, offensive security related. And I was just having this discussion over Twitter yesterday and last night is like, most of the time when we do a pen test, we're not telling the client to do another pen test. Like we're talking about foundational aspects of security, like basics and kind of the tried and true things. And we use words a lot like defense in depth and layered security and zero trust. And we use all these buzzwords and they're great. And, they can be effective at getting someone's attention. But, I really thought this would be a good topic to kind of demystify or just kind of break down and articulate, when we say defense in depth or when we say layered security, what does that actually mean from a practical sense? And what we'd like to do in this episode is for all the IT people, the admins, the sysadmins, the CISOs, the CIOs, if you're in that position and you're listening, we'll hopefully, share some actionable advice, some practical ideas that you can implement to, do defense in depth. And that's kind of the idea for this and kind of the backstory and perspective that I think I'd like to go with this.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And, we kind of frequently fall back on the concept of defense in depth when we're in meetings where we're delivering pen test results, right? And we don't always, but occasionally we get pushback a little bit from clients, and they're like, hey, it's probably okay that application doesn't have really good input validation because I've got a WAF. Or maybe it's okay that I'm using Telnet because we've got a firewall. And so that kind of is something that we leverage. And so I think it's a good topic to cover. So at a high level, what is the general concept? Let's take it from zero and then step all the way up.
Yeah. So the way I think of it is, and I think it's kind of a cheesy example, right? It's the cliche castle and moat example, right? It everybody references when you talk about this kind of thing, right? You have the moat and you have the drawbridge and you have towers and you have the, what's the name for like, not a barracks, but it's like a man trap, right? You have certain things, the bollard, bollard or something.
Bollards are, I think like vertical stops so that
yeah,
big stuff can't get too close,
but
but yeah.
Yeah. But anyways,
the no man's zone or whatever, no man's land that is kind of separates the exterior from the interior. We would call it the DMZ in modern times. Yeah.
Right. And, in the castle analogy, just to take that one step further, there's things that you can't necessarily control, which is, where you put your castle. Like you might put it on a cliff or next to a cliff so that you only have to defend one side. Right. And so I think there's a lot of analogies that you can play on with things like that, things like castles and kind of defending a structure and stuff like that, which Brad, I know you obviously have a lot of background and experience in, and maybe there's some analogies there that we can talk through from your background. But I think that's the initial approach that I take is like, okay, what are all the things that I can do to make an attacker's life difficult? And kind of the end goal for me is to make the attackers work harder, make them perform more steps so that there's more opportunity for them to get detected, right? Make them jump through as many hoops as possible, which is realistic in my environment, so that hopefully I can kind of deter that threat and detect it and evict them from the network. And that's kind of how I think about it. And I think about various things that are kind of redundant controls or redundant mm-hmm. systems to hopefully deflect that attack. So that's kind of like my high level thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense, you know? And so the concept for me is very much like, you know, you hit a really good phrase there, and that was, you know, overlapping or stacking controls. And so the idea here is that a single control failure should not significantly expose your organization to a cyber incident, right? And so let's think about what that means, like in a controlled, in the format of controls, right? So I had a boss, super good guy, and he always had really good, you know, thoughts on this. And he would always say, I never want to be one misconfiguration away from an incident. And usually that was in the context of like firewalls, right? Everybody loves to rely on those. They're super valuable. They're a core part of IT in defense. However, they're not perfect, and no controls are. And I think the concept of defense in depth is stacking controls so that a single failure, point of failure, doesn't exist. And, you know, in the example of the castle, like, you know, you might even say, why have the moat if I have 30-foot walls? And it's because those walls can be defeated, right? Whether it be through, you know, launching rocks at them or climbing over them. And same thing, right? The firewall's really awesome unless the bad guy starts from inside your environment through the phishing email, okay? And now we have EDR in place, or now we have email filtering. And so, you know, like you said, I want this attack to go through as many of those controls as possible. Yep. And so that's really where the defense in depth. We don't want to lean too heavily on one thing. I think we as an industry have done that a lot. You know, when firewalls first hit the market, you know, in the 90s, it was like, dude, everybody's got to have an awesome, the firewalls are fantastic. That's super cool. Nowadays, it was EDR, right? When EDR really first hit and it kind of evolved past antivirus, I think we put a lot of eggs in that basket. Yep. And then when bypasses started showing up, it kind of hit us hard. So that's where the concept, I think, hits home.
Yeah, and I think we have to push this idea of deflection and deterrence as more so than prevention, right?
Yeah.
Because as we know, you know, things are going to get in. Like you just pointed out, you know, there will be security controls that are bypassed. There are ways to get around certain things. There's ways to kind of achieve your goals if you try hard enough, right? Mm-hmm. And there's numerous examples of that taking place that we've seen. And I think the important discussions we have to have are around like deflection, deterrence, and kind of using those words and thinking about what
that means. And detection.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So those three D's, deflection, deterrence, and detection is great. That's a great, what's the word for when you have, what's that English, like, what's the word for when you have three words of like,
the same? I know what you're talking about. I can't remember it though.
An alliteration? Is that what it's called?
I think so.
Is that right? Okay, cool.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm not an idiot. or maybe I am, and that's completely wrong. Somebody will tell me.
Yeah. Please do.
So yeah, what I think
we're hackers,
about,
not experts in the English language, but
yeah. So I think to think about this tangibly, I think it's a good idea to have some examples. And how I like to think about this, and oftentimes how I think through it and communicate to people, is using the example of like an attacker attacking from outside in.
Yeah.
Or, you know, on the opposite, you know, you start with the end goal, like they, you know, compromise the domain or they got domain admin, you kind of work backwards, like what would stop them here, what would stop them there, and kind of work backwards. Yeah. So starting like outside in, I think, you know, a lot of incidents start with social engineering, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the controls that can stop that, right? We have email filters you mentioned earlier. We have web content filters internally. So if somebody clicks on a link and that's a newly registered domain, that can be a control. So we start thinking about, okay, external controls, preventing or deflecting that attacker from getting in. Okay, let's say they get in, right? We have EDR, we have antivirus, we have firewalls, host-based firewalls, right?
Mm-hmm.
So start thinking about and kind of threat modeling what that looks like and kind of playing out some of those scenarios of if somebody got in, you know, what could happen. If somebody got local admin on machine, you know, what happens from there?
Yeah.
If they're able to pivot to a server, what controls do I have to kind of deflect them from achieving their goals at each of those steps? And, you know, a good resource to that is probably MITRE, right? MITRE, the MITRE framework has a number of techniques and things that you can reference to say at any given point in kind of an attack lifecycle, what are the techniques that are being used? And then also, how do I defend against that? Because MITRE also has defensive controls and mitigations for those in that framework. So I think that's a good place to go to kind of start, you know, drilling this and figuring out what you need in place, what you should have in place, and what might work for you.
Yeah. So that's actually how we did it in the financial world. And, you know, everybody can probably imagine, right? We had big budgets for security. And so, you know, if we needed something, we got it, because security is paramount in when you're dealing with people's money, obviously. So, so we were unique in that, in the cyber world, that we did have a pretty hefty budget. And what we did is we would leverage the MITRE framework, for example, and we worked backwards from the threat. And so let's kind of do that exercise really quickly, because I think it beautifully illustrates defense in depth at a micro level, right? So let's take that example, right? So let's take the phishing example. I think it's an excellent one because everybody understands. And so we work backwards from the threat, and we broke out our controls into three categories, right? People, from processes, right? Technology, and then individual human behavior, right? So we want to impact human behavior. We want to have processes that help us to mitigate those threats. And then we want to have technology that will do that, right? So what does that look like in practice? Well, like you mentioned, we were leveraging Proofpoint, which at the time was probably one of the absolute best and most advanced email filtering platforms out there. It may still be. I don't live in that world anymore. But, you know, so we went out and we got the best technical control to help solve that problem, right? And Proofpoint was fantastic for that. And so, you know, then the next thing was, you know, what about people, right? So yeah, man, we were doing phishing campaigns. If somebody failed, you know, a phishing campaign more than once, we actually were tracking that. Like, we had, you know, quarterly updates where we went into a meeting with executives and we were like, hey, these three people failed the phishing campaign three times in a row. We're going to have to go have a real hard conversation with them, right? Because you can't work at a bank if you're bombing phishing campaigns. And so we took it very seriously. It wasn't just a slap on the wrist, go take this Kevin Mitnick video on Know Before's website. It was, you could lose your job. And especially depending on position, right? If I'm a teller, or, you know, I'm somebody that has access to move money. So we address the people aspect. That's another control. And then, you know, also mentioned processes, right? Where we had human beings going in and reviewing the email logs, right? So if there were suspected ones that maybe didn't quite hit that mark and still made it through, so we had processes in place where we were looking through that. So that's kind of the long form answer of a singular approach. And by the way, we had many, many more controls. That's just an easy way to hit each one of those people, process, technology check boxes, working backwards from the threat.
Yep. And then you touched on this too, even auditing and compliance, like assessing those controls is part of your defense in depth strategy, right? That's why we do penetration tests, right? Penetration tests. Seek to find vulnerabilities, but also to, you know, QA the controls that we have in place, right? Yeah. If I find a vulnerability, but I'm not able to exploit it because you have a control in place, that control is working, you know?
Yeah. But how do you know if it's working? And that's the right piece that you just hit on. And that is, right, yeah, we're going to audit that, right? And because you may or may not be surprised to hear this, but things evolve and things change, threats change, controls change. And so, yeah, dude, you got to check on it. That's what pen testing is great for, but it's also the reason pen testing comes at the end of the life cycle of a control, because pen test doesn't do you any good if you don't have any controls, right? It's just going to be a raffle stump and nobody wants that. So yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's where auditing and compliance, they have a place. Even though everybody grumbles when you hear it, they exist for a reason.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, auditing and compliance takes a more holistic, firm-wide, organization-wide, risk-based approach, whereas those specific technical assessments are very specific to that type of assessment, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, having that visibility of risk in the environment is absolutely necessary, right? So you can... you know, gather all that information together from your technical assessments, from your security assessments and risk assessments, and say, what do I need to focus on?
Yeah.
And how do I, you know, it's a means for identifying where you're weak. You know, it's identifying where you have holes in that, you know, defense in depth strategy, along with all the other assessments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally agree with that. And you know, one of the things that I think people don't put enough emphasis on, is understanding risk tolerance. Okay. And risk tolerance has a big play here. We are, you know, in the financial world, we were very risk adverse, right? We do not want to take risks with people's money, because the implications of that are significant, right? And so we would put excess controls in place, right? Like, one of the biggest problems we faced was were users like online banking clients giving their freaking credentials away. It was their job to give their credentials away so people could take their money. So we were having to put things into place to keep that from happening, to save them from themselves, if you will. And that's not necessarily going to translate over to another world where, you know, the intent is to be open. Right. So, you know, what comes to mind is like document sharing. You know, what's the Pastebin? Pastebin's yep. a great example, right? They probably don't need MFA and behavioral monitoring and conditional yep. access and all of the things that we're building into, you know, the security of an online banking platform. And so they're going to be a little more risk tolerant. Yep. And therefore, their controls and their defense in depth strategy is going to reflect that. So it's not all a one size fit all thing.
Yep. Yeah. And threat modeling plays a big role in that. You know, it's not something we've talked a lot about on the podcast.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's something that, you know, as security people, we're cognizant of, right? We want to build controls and build layers and defenses for protection and deflection and deterrence and detection against the things that we should be worrying about, right? Yeah. There's no sense in building a $4 million security system around something that's worth $5, right?
Yeah.
And there's no sense in building a defense around something that's not being attacked, right? Or that we don't have evidence that's being attacked, or we don't suspect will be attacked, or is less likely to be attacked, right? Yeah. So threat modeling is a key component of this. And, you know, I think understanding the industry that you're in, the type of business that you do, the locations that you're in, especially if you're international, right?
Oh yeah, you're going to be a target.
The customers or the clients that you have, you know, like we work with a lot of law firms who may work with a lot of big organizations or big individuals that might be more or less targeted than others, right?
Right.
In other industries, you know, manufacturing is very big with you know, espionage and kind of stealing trade secrets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Especially when you get to like defense contractors and stuff like that from an industrial standpoint. So understanding your threats, you know, kind of the risks that you have potential to have in your organization, how you might be attacked is going to inform that defense in depth strategy.
It is. And I like that approach. It's a more advanced approach, right? So you need to be kind of up on the maturity model just a little bit before you start threat modeling, because you really need to understand your controls. And that's a challenge for larger organizations. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you have more than 10 dedicated IT security personnel, you're in a pretty big organization. And there's so many moving parts, it's really hard to kind of get your arms around what you have going on. But you have to before you can get to the threat modeling stage. I like the approach of threat. So let me ask this question, because I think it's important for the conversation. What is the difference between assessing controls based on specific MITRE techniques and threat modeling? How do we separate those? What are their origin points? How are they different?
Yeah, so I think of threat modeling as identifying all the potential attacks/attack vectors that, you know, you're potentially faced with at a firm, right? At an organization.
Yeah.
So the types of threat groups, their incentives or their motivations, right, for attacking, you know, said organization. It might be financial gain. It might be you know, political, it might be activism or hacktivism, as they like to say. So understanding the motivations of the threats that you're facing, the types of techniques that they use, the capabilities that they have for attacking you is important in threat modeling. And that's kind of how I differentiate that between, you know, looking at specific controls and what fits the best for that situation. So whether it's email or endpoints or firewalls, you know, figure out what's the best technical control, starts with kind of figuring out what those threats are, what are their motivations, what are their capabilities. And that's kind of how I think about it from a high level.
Yep. Completely agree with that, man. And so if we put that into a practical example, if we were to, you know, like we alluded to earlier, if we're working backward from a list of MITRE techniques, okay, and we hit on like RCE, remote code exploit, right? In remote code execution. So that makes a ton of sense for somebody that's in the industrial space, right? That have on-prem physical machines and devices that need to be protected against those types of attacks. If I am a law firm and I'm using a SaaS product to host my documents, and that's the most important thing to me, maybe that technique doesn't apply. So instead of kind of blindly just absorbing all of these techniques and evaluating them against your controls, we go out and we say, who is attacking law firms right now? Like, what threat actors, what organizations, what nation states are coming after them, and what techniques are they using? And then we can go pull from that MITRE box, but now we have a more focused, more realistic approach. This is where we're doing like true analysis of our defense in depth strategy, right? And I want to know, like, if we're talking like that all of my crown jewels are hosted in a SaaS platform, man, I'm going to analyze them, you know, head to toe, right? Yeah. How good is the MFA implementation? How good is conditional access? What are we doing for behavioral analysis? You know, are we properly zero trust walling that so that when the endpoint does get compromised, because it will, how are we protecting that from the compromised session or credentials or whatever? And so now we can really focus the concept of threat modeling, of working backwards from specific tactics and techniques, and then applying that to our defense in depth and seeing how it holds up. So full circle.
And something I would recommend, in something that we do, so I'm biased, right? Something that we offer is an incident response tabletop exercise, but doing it as a true scenario, right?
Yes,
not just doing, you know, a short little, you know, half an hour conversation, like with a couple PowerPoint slides, like actually go through an engagement where you develop an exercise, you talk through it, and then you carry out that exercise with people who are involved in, who would be involved in an incident, right? Mm-hmm. You want to have representation from the various people, and you want to drill that. You want to go through those processes. And something that I would recommend is taking something like the DFIR report, mm-hmm. and looking at the DFIR report, the various reports that are in there, and picking the ones out that are maybe specific to you, your organization, your industry, whatever, something that you're concerned about, and go through that with your team. Sit down, spend some time and go through and be like, okay, if this happened, like, what do we have here? What do we have here? Like, oh, we didn't really think about this. Maybe we should think about this other thing. So going through reports like that, going through exercises where you're thinking about these things and saying, like, if this happens, you know, like, what do we do? What do we have? What's our strategy? You know, how do we respond to this type of thing? And going through those scenarios, I think, is really helpful. It sounds like very minimalistic or very basic, but the amount of times we've done a tabletop exercise with a client that says, like, oh, that's a good idea, or we didn't think about that, or it's, you know, you're looking for that little bit of thing that takes you to the next step in your defense. Like, oh yeah, I can do that. We can implement something like that we didn't think of before. That is super valuable. And doing that on a regular basis and really taking it seriously is kind of like how I would kind of manifest this in an organization to kind of improve and mature the security program.
So yeah, dude, and it doesn't have to take a ton of money, right? And so one of the things that we did at all of the banks that I was at is we had an annual third party tabletop, right? Where we hired a really slick firm, and they would come in and we would spend 2 or 3 days stepping through a scenario. And then we'd spend another 2 days exchanging information with executive management, right? Because that's like a different aspect to the tabletop. And so, but we did quarterly internal tabletops. that were just for the red team and the blue team within our organization. And so, and it would rotate. So like, you know, Q1, it might be my turn to make up the scenario. And so to your point about the DFIR report, anytime a major threat report would come out, my team was responsible for writing a formal response. So we had to intake that document, process, identify all of the things that were in that, and then create a document, deliver to executive management that was, here are our specific controls that exist. And we had a 0 to 10 on their perceived effectiveness. Like, how effective is it? Because that's another thing that people, it's not a binary thing. What, right? So like, I'll give you a great example. The proof point thing I said earlier. Yeah, proof point's fantastic. Was it perfect? Absolutely not. Things got through. So that's an 8 out of 10, mm-hmm. because it's not perfect. So I said all that to say this, the two things that you just mentioned, aside from time, are practically free. You can pull down that DFIR report. You can pull down, the Verizon data breach, whatever it is, and you can analyze your controls against all of those things that are in those reports. And then you can build tabletop exercises from those reports, and it's real material stuff. And you can evaluate, just do a self-evaluation, man. It doesn't have to go to executive management. It doesn't have to go anywhere other than your group. And then you can make that actionable.
Yeah. And the first time you do it, if you've never done it before, it's going to suck, right? It's not going to be yeah. good. People aren't going to get value from it. They're going to be like, this is a waste of time. But the more you do it, the more comfortable you're going to be with kind of being vulnerable with yourself. And I mean, not vulnerable, like a vulnerability. I mean, like being honest, right?
Admitting your faults, man. Yeah.
Being honest about it, admitting that, like, hey, maybe we don't have such a strong, defense here. Being able to admit those things and being able to come together and not point fingers at any one group and say, hey, like this isn't good, or, that's not enough. Like, the point of it is to all learn, to all grow. And it's not to point fingers or blame, it's to get better. Right. And the more you do that, the more you get comfortable working together as a group, the better off you're going to be. And once you've done it a couple of times, then get outside help, right? Then get somebody who does this all day long, who sees various organizations, somebody like us, to come in and have that outside view of things to give you kind of the outside perspective that maybe you didn't see before, right?
Agreed.
But I definitely echo that. You don't need to do it super expensive to start. Do it in your group yourself, and then once you're comfortable, reach out, have a third party come in, get a independent set of eyes on it, and get a fresh perspective.
Yeah. And one thing I'll kind of say to wrap up on the tabletop stuff is, the more time you spend with your vendor, when you finally do go get a third party to do this, the more time you put in with them creating the scenario, the more value you're going to get back out of it. We sometimes have scenarios where the vendor is like, oh, I don't really care what the scenario is, just whatever you guys think is best. That's almost never going to give us a good outcome. And so we need to hear from them. Where do you guys think you're strong? Where do you guys think you're weak? What are you protecting? What threats are in your space? And so we need to make it as custom and tailored and unique as we possibly can to their environment. If I show up with a scenario that involves, Linux logs, and you're a Mac shop, it's going to be a weird tabletop, man. So put some time in with your folks to make sure it's realistic. So, all right, man. So defense in depth, we hit that, and then we hit past it and went all over the place. But I think we kind of made our case. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this has been a great discussion. Hopefully it has provided people who are listening some insights into how two people would think about it. Who've been there before and have walked the walk. So I hope that was practical advice for you, something actionable that you can take away. If it was, let us know in the comments, or, message us and let us know if you got value from this, or if this resonated with you specifically, or if it makes sense. And if there's anything else that you want to hear on this topic or others, let us know, because we've got a lot of experience on the team over here throughout the organization. And we want to bring discussions to you folks that are valuable, that provide you you know, actionable advice, stuff that you can tangibly take and use to defend your organization. So hopefully it was super good for you as it was for us.
Yeah. Good times, man. So that's all the time we have for you folks today. If you enjoyed what we're doing here, the best thing you can do is just share this with peers and friends and tell people about the podcast. Like, subscribe, all that good jazz. And otherwise, we'll see you next Wednesday.